This is Jewish Board Talk with Cherise Zifford, only on 101.9 High FM.
In preparation for this interview, I thought I would Google funny quotes on money. Turns out there are quite a lot of them. I'll share just some. One, the quickest way to double your money is to fold it over and put it in your back pocket. Number two, men are like bank accounts. Without a lot of money, they don't generate a lot of interest. And my last one, I'm stuck somewhere between I need to save money and you only live once. What happens though when you feel that you need to save money but your partner believes you only live once? I'm delighted to have now as my guest financial advisor and author of Midlife Money Makeover and 14 Action Steps to Make Your Money Work for You, Kim Potgieter. And we are talking money. Kim, welcome and thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Kim, before we go into what happens when you and your partner have different views on how money should be spent, let's talk about money generally and our relationship with money.
So with you Googling and getting those different quotes around money, it got me thinking about where it all starts. And for most time, we are listening to our parents when we're children, and we're hearing messages just like that. I mean, those were at least funny ones. But often parents will say, oh, you know, money doesn't grow on trees. You know, money is the root of all evil. And these are things that we subliminally hear. But then what we do with those things that we hear our parents say is those things start becoming our reality. And they just, you know, they start off as just beliefs and thoughts, but then we start putting them into action. So we actually start making sure that they happen in our lives. And this happens very young in our lives. I mean, when I speak to people and I say to them, do you know when you should start talking to your children about money? They go, well, you know, definitely much later. We don't talk about money to young children. I mean, why would we talk to And then the research that I've done actually shows that our relationships with money are formed by the age of seven.
Wow. So things like money doesn't grow on trees, and where do you think you're going to get that from? And I suppose does all impact on your psychology? Yeah.
It does. And it starts like you start as a child, like working out where you fit in. You know, where do we go to school? Where do we live? What are our parents, when are they talking about money? Do they talk about money in a positive way? Do they talk about money that it's, you know, like something that's so hard and so tough for them? And we're just trying to find our place, remember, in the world. And we're trying to then place where money fits into it all. And with all of this happening, it's how we start developing our relationship with money.
Does money determine your place in the world?
So money does not determine your place in the world unless you let it. So many times I speak to people and I say, well, you know, what does money represent to you? Like what is it? And they'll go, oh, it's definitely, you know, security for me. Others will tell me it's freedom to choose. Others tell me it's power. And that's what happens. So it depends what we decide in our lives.
Yeah, no, I'm just thinking, I mean, you make such a good point about, you know, how people are influenced by money, and you talk about the family, but then you mentioned how you go out of the family, probably at schools, what schools you go to, and then you probably do get put potentially in a category determined on money. No,
but it's not real. So again,
no, it's not real.
It's really not, because, you know, do we say that people who make money are more successful people? Do we say they're better people? What happens is we all have the socialization. Again, when we're children, it's things that we hear our parents say. I mean, like, I've got three children, you know, they've gone through schools. And I've so many times my kids would come home and say to me, you know, Mom, so-and-so does so well. And I go, like, no, they don't do so well. That's their parents, firstly. And secondly, how do you know they're really doing well? And how do you know it's not on debt?
Yeah.
So
Or they come home and say, so-and-so has the latest,
And so-and-so might have the latest, because so-and-so's parents are more comfortable with debt.
I mean, it's such an interesting discussion because it kind of does influence so much about how we think about so much.
And yet it's a topic that people don't really want to talk about. So it's one of those really taboo topics where people are brought up to think it's not cool to talk about it. And I encourage, this is dinner time conversation, I encourage people to be talking to their children, not about the fact that we need to have lots of it in order for us to be happy, but the fact of, like, where does it come from? How does it fit into our life? Is it our master? Is it a servant? You know, what is the role of money in our homes? What is the role of money going forward in our lives? I mean, many times I hear people, they'll say to me, oh, no, I am choosing this and this as a career. And I'll say, you know, what made you choose it? I'm going to make lots of money. And I go, well, why would that be the main driver as to why you choose a career? You need to do that every single day.
Yeah, well, I know a lot of people who would say that. And I know a lot of young people like saying that as well, which is a bit worrying.
So I think it's because we're taught that a lot of times that people with money might be happier. Not money is the root of all evil, as some of the quotes go. But I work with people every day around money. I have been doing for the last 20 years. I'm a financial planner. I get to speak to people every day around where money fits into their life. And, you know, I'm often asked the question, are people with lots of money much happier than people with a little bit of money? And I must say, the answer that I come to is, if our basic needs are met, and I start by saying that, because if our basic needs aren't met, it's very difficult. So if our basic needs are met, it doesn't mean that if we have an abundance of money, that we're happier than somebody else whose basic needs are met. And I think this is important to understand, because we convince ourselves often that if we had that, we'd be happier. If we had more of this, we'd be happier. And I think this is where people go wrong. And it's more around the gratitude of what we do have that can be the determinant of the happiness, as opposed to the quantity of what we have.
Which I guess at some point is also a relative term.
But that's why I'm saying to you, it needs to be, the basics need to be met. Yeah. And that's why you can't even have this conversation if your basics are not met. It's a difficult one.
When I think of kids and saving money, I think of a little pink piggy bank with only one way where putting the money in, and very, very hard to take that money out. Are we encouraging our kids to save? Should we be encouraging our kids to save? And what are your views on pocket money?
So I'm a great one who believes in pocket money. I think children should know where money comes from, what we need to do with it, and the value of it. So I believe that that's the best way to start it. You know, we talk about the little pig, and I just actually the other day I went with my daughter, and we were at a pottery place, and I painted a little pig for Abigail, my domestic's daughter. And I took her pig, and now when I come home, I give her the coins to put in it. And I do realize that this is just a way, and I mean, how old-fashioned is that? But it's a way of just them conceptualizing what money is. Because going forward for our children, they're not going to probably be dealing with any cash anyway. So more importantly than the pig and putting the money in, it's a great place to start, is actually when you do give your children pocket money, is showing them that a part of that should be invested. And then having that bank account where they can see they're getting the interest, and they can conceptualize what compound interest is. And then one step further, when their bank account has got a certain amount of money, teaching them that they don't keep it there to spend, that they put it in a better investment. And I think you can really do this with kids from a young age, because it will help them understand that there's a thing called compound interest. And it will help them understand that they don't always have to be working so hard for their money just to get it. There's a way of investing and letting your money work while you're sleeping.
It's like financial literacy, which in a way should be taught at school.
Definitely should be taught at school. But as we know, we don't really do money stories at school, and we don't get those kind of lessons.
No, we're going to have to take a break. But after the break, we are going to talk, I think, a little bit about different kinds of money, as you said. Cash probably is not going to be as prominent soon. And also, back to the original question, what happens when everybody has different ideas about money?
This is Jewish Board Talk with Cherie Zifford, only on 101.9 High FM.
And I'm talking to Kim Porchetta, financial advisor and author of Midlife Money Makeover and the other book, 14 Action Steps to Make Your Money Work for You. Kim, changing world, changing way we view money. We were talking a little bit before about cryptocurrency. Most people don't, well, many people don't understand it. I won't say most. Other people believe in it. Like, how do you know what and who to trust?
So for me, always, if you're a different generation, you're going to definitely be looking at Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. But again, I personally want to go with investments that I know are regulated. For me, that's important. But I suppose if you're younger, you can maybe be looking at different investments that maybe can take on more risk. I, as being a financial planner, always encourage people to work with a financial planner who works with reputable companies that invest your money. Because otherwise, at the end of the day, you don't have the strategy of what you're trying to achieve. Because a lot of times once we invest, it's then our emotions that go with it. So whatever it's invested in, if we believe, you know, we get nervous when things go down, we end up, you know, taking it out because things are down. When it's up, we're taking, you know, our behavior becomes wrong. So I like to have a accountability partner, somebody that I can just make sure that is keeping my emotions in check. And for that, you know, for me, I would always go to a financial planner that would help me with those kind of decisions so that I knew my emotions would always be kept in check and my investments would have been left long enough to get the returns that I needed.
That's solid advice. What happens when in a family everybody has a different idea about how money should be spent?
Such an interesting question, because it's something that happens every day in families, in homes. Again, the conversation that I said, conversations around money don't happen. It's quite a taboo topic. Normally one person in the family takes control of it, is managing it, is running it. And then what happens is other people in the family, their voices maybe don't get heard. And they could become resentful. And sometimes the way they become resentful is they just spend more because they're not involved in the decisions. So I do encourage this as, first of all, to start with the couple. So if you're in a relationship with somebody that you're having these conversations and you are both taking an active role, because what becomes quite hard is when I do seek sometimes couples and they come in and the one person will be pointing and going, well, why didn't you take care of it better? Why isn't what it should be? Why do we have to sell our house? Why aren't we looked after like other people? And I always go, well, I think you should both be taking an active role in it. So I do encourage people to, as couples, to talk about it and to come up with a solution. Sometimes one is way more analytical and would be better at it, but the other one might be more intuitive. And I think if you have a plan together, you understand where you're going, even though you have different beliefs around money, you know where you're going to with it, as opposed to no plan. So then you want to do one thing, you want to do one thing, but it doesn't, because you haven't got a strategy, there's no real reason you need to stick to it.
And I imagine that's when money becomes a metaphor for other things happening.
Absolutely.
So you have to be pretty much a psychologist as well as a financial advisor.
Well, actually, that's what I did. I went to university and studied psychology originally. And I wanted to work with people around their money. And then what happened was I realized nobody goes to a psychologist to talk about money. They go to their financial planner. And I actually went back to university and I restudied to become a financial planner. Wow. I did my honors so that I could rather be a planner and people could come around their relationship with money. Because for me, it's kind of that missing link. Mm. We can give investment advice, but often we don't give the behavioral advice that goes with the investment advice.
Oh, that's absolutely fascinating. And then the other members of the family. You saying literacy early on, as soon as possible.
Literacy early on, and also it's our behavior as parents where we start giving our children absolutely everything they want. And then what we do, we helicopter parent, we give children everything they want. We often go without, and then we form adults that have these expectations. And then when they are working, they don't earn enough, and we as parents end up carrying on supporting them. And then you talk about families. We then have our parents that haven't looked after their money, and then we end up supporting them. So often there's a whole sandwich generation conversation. So that's why it's so important that you're having these discussions and making sure that everybody's well looked after, so that, you know what I mean, it's a much more harmonious thing, and money can be an enabler.
So I know Craig is going to probably tell us to start wrapping up, but before we do, your details, if anybody would like to get in touch with you or access to your two books.
So I have a website, which is kimporgetta.com, where you can access free ebooks and buy my books. And then my company is Chartered Wealth Solutions. We're a holistic financial planning company.
So thank you so much for joining me, Kim Porgetta, author and financial advisor. Just before I say goodbye, let me tell you that we are aware of ongoing issues affecting our transmitters and apologize for the disruption. Our technical operations team is actively working to resolve the problem. Unfortunately, this isn't a quick fix, and restoration may take some time. We appreciate your patience and understand while we work to restore full service. For updates, please stay tuned or check our website and social media channels. Thank you for bearing with us. Indeed, thank you to all of you for listening. Thanks to Craig and Vusi for helping me put the show together. If there's anything you'd like to comment on, you're welcome to send me an email on charisse@sajbd.org. Otherwise, until next week, I wish you all Shabbat Shalom.